This is the Mindset Toolkit Podcast. The continual pursuit of improvement.
How's everybody going? My name is Selwyn, host of the Mindset Toolkit Podcast, and on this episode, I'll be talking about the book by Simon Sinek, Leaders Eat Last. I'll be distilling down the concepts and main points that Simon Sinek raises in this great book. Thanks for joining me. This is a really great book, a bit of a shorter listen to, the second book that Simon Sinek's released, a follow-on after the first book entitled Start With Why. So the full title of the book is Leaders Eat Last, Why Some Teams Pull Together and Others Don't. It's a great book for anyone that's looking to get into leadership or are currently in a leadership position. It definitely frames a mindset of how to treat your team members and lead someone rather than managing somebody. He kind of gets into the weeds with the anthropological brain chemistry, reasoning behind why we do things and why that would make someone a good or a bad leader. But nonetheless, very useful book that can give you some great tools to use when leading a team. So let's get into it. He talks about leaders are the ones that charge forward. The reason we follow the leaders is because they're willing to sacrifice what is theirs to protect the team. They're never willing to sacrifice the team for what is theirs, and that's kind of the basis for the whole book, where, I mean, as the title suggests, the leaders eat last, and their well-being is put behind the well-being of the people that they are leading. A lot of modern-day doctrine train managers, not leaders, which focuses on the short-term wins and are seen to be better than the long-term gains. Along with the leaders eat last mentality, the book also puts forward the fact that we should always be striving for focusing on the long-term outcomes rather than getting quick short-term gains, because these quick short-term wins are almost always detrimental to long-term growth and long-term prosperity. Leaders need to understand the why behind their business. I guess you can kind of go back to Start With Why, his first book, which is really great. I'll be talking about that in a future episode. But if you don't understand the why behind the business, you won't understand the why behind why you're leading this team. You won't have the motivation to truly lead them in a proper way. And finally, behind this whole leaders eat last mentality is that their people are not expendable. You need to recognize that you're leading people, not machines, and you need to basically understand their psychology and the reasoning why they do what they do. He first off covers off empathy really quickly. The leaders have a duty to provide safety for their team, which is kind of self-explanatory. If the team members don't feel safe in their environment, they're going to be too busy watching their backs rather than looking outside to the outside threats. Empathy is a great key trait of many great leaders, and they're willing to put the team first, even if it is at their own expense. Great leaders recognize that their employees are people too. It kind of seems obvious, but a lot of problems stem from management not trusting their own team, no matter what the level is. You need to earn trust, you must extend trust, so you have to put yourself out there first to kind of believe that others have good intentions and will trust you in the end. When management values their people, working for a sense of obligation gets replaced with working with a sense of pride, and I think everyone kind of knows that when they're appreciated and feel like a valued member of the team. They don't really work there because, oh, it's another paycheck. They're working there because they really believe not only in the leadership, but in the spirit of the company. They get the why behind the company as well. They've bought in. And instead of working with like the lowest level of effort put in, they're kind of going the extra mile, staying the extra time, doing the extra work because there's that pride of ownership. And how to truly create this awesome pride is to protect the teams within the company from each other. So protect each individual from other individuals in the company that might be seeking to, you know, stab each other in the back, as it were. You might have separate teams like marketing, sales, finance, this and that, and you really don't want to encourage competition between each other, because they are working together for a common goal. They're not really working against each other. You really want to create a work environment where It's a culture of work where people work hard simply because they want to and because they love their work. You need to treat teams as a resource to be protected rather than a resource to be exploited. I guess it kind of comes down to the people too. You want to always understand that employees are people and you want to treat them with respect so that they treat you with respect, leading to them working really hard for you. The next chapter talks about belonging from me to we. It kind of flows on from the next one where you want to create that circle of safety. You remove the individuals and create a group of people unified towards a common goal. In any team, there are so many external threats to a team's survival that it's really up to the leaders to create a safe environment within the team so that nobody is threatened from anybody within. Here's with like kind of four steps is to give people a sense of belonging, create a culture with a strong sense of belief, offer trust and empathy, and give people the power to make decisions. And by creating this safe team environment, our team members start to focus on reacting to outside threats and outside opportunities rather than wasting energy to protect themselves from inside threats and other people within the team. And he really stresses this safety within the team. It is just like a key pillar of great leadership. He cites some studies where they show that people that work in a company that they don't feel they belong to show the same signs of stress as those that are unemployed. Not having a safe place to work in, it reduces loyalty. People are only working there because they're getting paid, so they're easily drawn away by any other company that's willing to pay them more. Worker stress isn't caused by demands of the work, but rather the degree to which they have control over their day. So there's an imbalance between the effort we put in and the reward we receive, and this creates stress and unhappiness. Studies have shown also that children are negatively affected by parents' mood when they get home rather than the hours at work. So someone could work a lot, see their kids for a shorter amount of time, but really focus on them, have a positive attitude, and be a great influence on their children. Compared with someone who spends the 4 to 8 hours a day at work, really hates it, comes home, and really has a negative impact on the children's lives and upbringing. The book now shifts focus onto the brain chemistry and what Simon Sinek believes has propelled the human species forward. The four main brain chemicals are the endorphins, dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin. And he then goes further into splitting these four chemicals up into two groups. Basically, the endorphins and dopamine serve us as individuals, whereas the serotonin and oxytocin serve the group as a whole. And these are framed as what he calls the chemicals of progress. Let's start off with endorphins. They're actually put out to mask physical pain. Endorphins are released in response to pain, and it has to do with survival. So that runner's high you get after running for 15, 20 minutes, your body's actually breaking down. So the body releases endorphins to make you feel good so that you want to keep running, which served us in the past when we were hunting an animal, running away from an animal. Our bodies have evolved to mask the pain that we feel while doing unpleasant things that lead us to not die. And funnily enough, you can't laugh and be scared at the same time. The next chemical for individual progress is dopamine, and that's an incentive for progress, so that feeling of satisfaction when we achieve something. It's helped propel the species forward because it made us goal-orientated. It helped keep us focused on the tasks at hand of what we were doing. And as we were completing a big goal, we'd get little doses of dopamine along the way to kind of, so we wouldn't lose track of what we were doing. And there's no biological incentive to do nothing. And because we are visual creatures, being able to write these goals down really helps us achieve these goals. And each time we kind of cross off a task on the list, we'll actually get a little hit of dopamine, which is a fun little fact. And now we shift over to the group brain chemicals, so serotonin and oxytocin. They're basically there to create trust and cooperation within society, and it discourages selfishness. Serotonin is what he calls the leadership chemical. It reinforces bonds between the leader and the followers. You can literally feel the weight of responsibility with this chemical. We can only feel accountability to others and make them proud, and you're no longer achieving for yourself, but for the greater good. And the more respect and recognition we receive, the more serotonin we receive, and then the more we want to get more recognition and respect from the group by giving more and more of ourselves to the group. Oxytocin is the chemical of love, friendship, and deep trust. It's a feeling we get when we're around close friends. It's also a chemical that the brain releases when we do something nice for others. And funnily enough, it also gets released when others do nice for us, and also when we witness other people doing nice things for other people. So we don't even have to do the nice things, we just have to witness nice things. Without oxytocin, we wouldn't have empathy. And without trust, we wouldn't have gotten as far as a species as we have. Basically, being able to sleep at night while others are at watch means that you're trusting others to watch your back. And if we didn't have this, no one would have been able to sleep without dying or getting attacked or whatever the case may be. And the big counter to these four chemicals is cortisol, which is basically the response to stress. And we've evolved as a species that cortisol isn't meant to last within the body. It's really only there when we have a real danger to our life. So that fight or flight response kicks in and we react and run or fight. So with prolonged levels of cortisol, it creates a paranoia, which makes us want to search for a threat in order to run, fight, or hide. Because back in our caveman days, we had like that sixth sense where, oh, there's a lion around the corner. So we need to really be on our senses to look for it. But again, if we're living 8 hours a day with cortisol coursing through our veins, everything is going to be a threat to us. No matter if it's life-threatening or not. We also start to feel the stress when we feel unsupported, because we're only responsible for ourselves and that no one else has our back. To our primitive brain, that means we are not part of the protective herd, and it induces a low-grade anxiety throughout the whole day. Cortisol also inhibits the release of oxytocin, which leads to us being more selfish and self-centered. So a work-life balance doesn't come from the time you spend at work, it's about the trust you feel when you're at work. And it's not the nature of the work or either, it's the amount of oxytocin and serotonin that gets released during the day. So serotonin boosts confidence and helps us inspire those around us. Oxytocin relieves stress, increases interest in the work we do, and improves our cognitive abilities. Both work together to inspire us. Having a high oxytocin and serotonin in the brains will make people want to stay in the company, even if you're offered higher money at another place, which leads to these long-term wins where the organization gains longevity. The book now goes on to ask, why do we have leaders in the first place? Basically, without social hierarchy, our species wouldn't have survived because there would have been no cooperation, which we needed to work as a team in order to survive back when it actually counted. Nowadays, we're all following someone, we're all subservient to somebody higher than us in society, whether it be a boss, a president, or even a celebrity. And serotonin is actually released, and it makes us feel good for doing something who is perceived as the alpha. And this release of serotonin is like a ploy in our brains to boost our position in the hierarchy, make us feel good for following somebody else. And the big reason why we follow these people of status and why we give these people power is because of a social contract that we all follow, that they will sacrifice for us. They're willing to lead and take the risk for undertaking dangerous activities, and they're willing to spend their resources, which are time, energy, or money. The result of this is that they should be willing to defend the tribe. Back in the day, it used to be they were the ones that defended from a warring tribe or a lion. These days, it's them taking a risk, starting a business venture. And the reason why we get upset these days with high-paid CEOs and corrupt politicians isn't because of how much they're paid, but because they're taking advantage of us, of what has given them, and they didn't offer their protection to their staff or to us. And we've all seen this. There are CEOs that get paid millions and millions of dollars that we feel deserve it. And there are other CEOs that get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and we don't think they deserve it. And it all stems back to this building trust within the teams, taking ownership for what it is that they're meant to be doing, and really protecting the people that they say they're meant to protect, creating safety within that team environment. And now the book again shifts to the focus on teams themselves. So it's not the intelligence of the people that make the value of the team, but rather the trust and support they feel within the team that will allow them to excel and succeed. Placing individuals in the wrong environment, aka a bad team, is akin to being a fish out of water. You could place the brightest and the best people in the wrong team and it will fail, when compared with creating a team of people who will trust and will sacrifice for each other. It's the trust within the team that makes the team successful. But this trust takes a lot of time to build and really needs to be a focused effort within the group members within the team, as well as the leader, to really garner this sense of trust. One of the big problems in modern day work culture is that people are no longer being viewed as people. They're being viewed as expendable, where short-term gains are being put before long-term loyalty. People are fired in the short term instead of working with them to create a long-term culture. So not only are we not building safety within the team, we're not building trust within the team either. When resources are scarce, people are more willing to share and cooperate with each other. When we think back to the prehistoric times and the small little tribes across the globe, it was in their group interest to survive, because they all had to band together to achieve common goals. And ironically, now that we're operating in a world of abundance, we've become selfish and self-centered and self-driven, because it's our desire for more and our reduced interaction with other people that blinds us to the reality of what we used to do. Dopamine-driven performance is a new norm. So this self-centered drive, achieve more at the expense of others, which is stemming from a lack of humanity and empathy. We wake up in the morning and go to work with the hope that someone will lead us and not manage us. Abundance can be destructive because it can short-wire our brains. It starts to abstract the value of things. So funnily enough, the more we have, the less we value these things. So not only does that go with money, but as a leadership position grows to manage more people, we no longer see them as people, but as commodities. So it's this abstraction that we're seeing in modern day society that's starting to kill the teams, to kill the safety, to kill this trust. When we divorce ourselves from reality through numerical abstraction, we become capable of inhuman behavior. We start to only pay attention to the metrics. So we become separated from customers and people and staff, so that we put numbers and cost savings over the safety of customers, clients, staff, employees, teammates, whatever the case may be. So the new responsibility of businesses, it would seem, is profits over anything else. There's no more moral responsibility, and society relies on people following these moral rules, and now we have a system where no one trusts anybody else. As Stalin said, the death of one man is a tragedy. The death of a million is a statistic. At one point, numbers blur the reality, and we no longer feel connected to the humanity. We are visual creatures, and when numbers are all we can see, our ability to empathize with humanity falters. Even with the big leaps in technology and the internet, we still feel better connected when we meet and touch in real life. Nothing can yet replace that. When groups get bigger than 150, people tend to lose efficiency and effort because they lose the connection with others. And when the leaders know their team personally and vice versa, care increases and the bonds form in both directions, leading to a more cohesive unit. He concludes that hierarchy is important, as each level knows they personally know the level above and below them. The larger the group of the people that we work with, the less likely we will become friends with people inside the business. So it's very important to meet the people that we help. It's imperative that we can see the tangible impact of all the work we do. Not only do we feel that our work has worth, but it also inspires us to do more. Simply getting told that our results are good isn't enough. We need to feel the results and analyze the numbers. And we also need to give time, not just money. Money is simply a measure of commodity. Time and effort show a true connection. People value this over money, as time and effort can't be reproduced or replaced. Simon Sinek goes over what he calls destructive abundance, which kind of follows on the previous topic, where this cultural shift towards commodity instead of humanity, where people want to identify with a brand nowadays. Teams don't create bad cultures. Cultures simply lead to bad leaders. This is because there's no security in the teams, meaning that people aren't willing to share because they are scared that they'll get taken advantage of. We work to advance the vision of a leader who inspires us, and we work to undermine a dictator who controls us. The biggest threat to any tyrant comes from within, simply because there is no protection from the workers, because there is no protection for the workers. It doesn't matter how a business conducts itself, but rather the quality of relationships within a business, and this all starts from the leader. What happens when the leader is wrong in a top-down hierarchy? The team goes off the cliff. The team has to think and not just do. The ones at the top have all the control and no information. So the ones at the bottom have all the knowledge and no authority. So what does this mean? This means that good leaders share what they know. They ask knowledgeable people for help and make introductions to make new relationships within their networks. Poor leaders hoard these things and feel that this is where their power comes from. This is, I think, really important here. The purpose of a leader is to give no orders. It is to give direction and intent and allow others to figure out what to do and how to get there. We want our team to think, not simply to follow. We want responsibility and not obedience. Remember, a great leader inspires and not just manages. The integrity also plays a key role in this, because leadership is not simply about being right all the time. It rests on character and telling the truth. And this trust from the truth evolves over time. Integrity is a practice. It exists when our actions are in line with our intentions. When you look at your leaders, you have to ask yourself if you would want to be in a foxhole with that person. And the leaders should question themselves and their integrity if the answer is no. Cooperation doesn't simply mean agreement. What it does mean is that you work together for a common goal. Working through hardship strengthens bonds between teammates. The oxytocin that's released by us doing good for each other when we work together as a team. And finally, this is where small businesses have a really good advantage over larger companies. In the aspects of innovation, they can run circles around larger companies. Even though all big companies were once small, once a company grows to a large enough size, it becomes less and less innovative. They start to get an incumbent thinking. Instead of coming up with new products, they're thinking of new ways to sell old products. However, when a company is small, they have a reason to grow. The survival mindset kicks in and it's very strong, and the team members rally together because there's more of a struggle. Once the incumbent becomes the large company, there's less struggle and that abundance mentality kicks in. So how can we avoid that? A leader must really create a challenge that outstretches the resources available to the team, but not their intellect. It's the vision of the big leap that inspires us, and not the small steps of action that completes the goal. So again, a really great book, covered a lot of points here, kind of a really good way to reframe what a leadership role means to you, or what you look for when you try and find a good leader out there. And that's all I have for today, so go out and either read or listen to Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek. Absorb it and use it. This has been Selwyn on the Mindset Toolkit podcast, and thanks for your time. Remember, what you learned today will serve you tomorrow, so go out and go get it.